Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Sure, take your time.
All right, good evening, everyone. As promised, we have got Professor Hamamoto. He's a YouTuber. He's an academic. He's got first-hand experience of how intelligence has infiltrated academia and skewed the viewpoints of people to suit their agenda. He's also been posting about intelligence in terms of co-opting hip-hop and musical scenes to suit their agenda. So we are going to draw on his extensive research. And huge thank you to everybody who's put questions in the community wall and see what he's got to say tonight. I've been enjoying his channel. His channel link is at the top of the description box if you're watching this on YouTube. And we would urge you to go down and subscribe and incentivize him to come back on here and show him some love. So first off, Professor Hamamoto, huge thank you for coming on, my friend.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Mr. Atwood. I've been looking forward to appearing with you. I consider you on par. Well, let me put it this way, because I don't want you to believe that I'm trying to blow smoke up your you-know-what. But I put you, if Charles Dickens was doing his work today with the technology, he would be doing what you're doing. There's so many biographical similarities between your life, because I've been watching you for a long time, and I know your backstory, your origin story. And just this weekend, I was reacquainting myself with this classic, literary classic, Oliver Twist. And I'm introducing on your show today something that I came up with, a term, a new meme for the fans of Sean Atwood. And that's Faganism. Because people want to know the list. Who are the names? Who are the personalities? Spill the tea. Give us the receipts. But they're missing the behavioral and structural system behind it. And I call it Faganism. Right? After Fagan, who was controlling Oliver Twist, who was, by the way, an orphan brought into this criminal circle. Amongst other boys, they're boys, of course, and they use little girls in order to seduce them and lure them in into this alternate universe run by Fagan, and he teaches them how to thieve. Now, his genius is that he doesn't do the thieving himself. He gets the little boys in compromising situations. He puts them in debt. He love bombs them. He gives them maybe an extra bowl of gruel to show them that he loves them. He takes them to a Fagan flavor camp. You know, just gives them the whole treatment, right? So the point I'm making, Mr. Atwood, is that this is a classic system we are seeing. And if I can contribute anything at all to the reportage that you've already been doing in on this specific topic of P. Diddy, that is to provide historical background context, or what I call cultural forensics.
I am tickled by your eloquent juxtaposition, and I appreciate your compliment. Thank you very much. So for the viewers who are not familiar with your work, could you just give them a little bit about your background first before we go into Diddy and intelligence, etc.?
Well, I'm a retiree from the University of California system, which is ground zero of a lot of the DNA, social, political, and cultural engineering. So I worked professionally in the belly of the beast, just like in the same way. I don't mean to elevate myself into his company, just like Charles Dickens used to go to Chancery. He was doing the reportage, writing down the little notes, looking at the criminal underworld. He was steeped in it, just as you were we don't need to go on that at this point. I mean, you got to see the American criminal justice system as a courtesy guest of the U.S. federal government. So he was doing the same thing. And I have that same predilection, let's say, and I managed to turn it into a profession. And I did that for 21 years at the Davis campus, doing this type of work. I've been lecturing on these topics. I've been looking at hip hop and rap in specific for over 20 years because I'm a child. I was a little kid, but I believe I'm a child of the 60s. So I saw this music that was emerging to be like the second coming of the 60s music, so far as protest, the politics of it. These figures, such as John Winston Lennon, named after Winston Churchill, who was a martyr to the truth. I saw this happening again, so I wanted to study it as it was emerging. And sure enough, we are seeing the arc, the trajectory of how hip-hop and rap started organically out of Black nationalism of the 1960s, because, you know, that's part of my area to fill in my own backstory, and that is race and ethnicity is one area. So I know this history. And the other is popular culture. I have a master's degree, believe it or not, in popular culture from Bowling Green State University back in 1976. So it's popular culture, media, and the third leg of that is sexuality. So I anticipated the whole GLBTQ, all that manipulation, the social engineering that was coming out of the university. I was in the belly of the beast as these architects were implementing this agenda, whose grand strategy is to reduce and control the human population genetically, because UC Davis is also one of the world centers of genetic modification. It was the agricultural unit of the University of California. I'm not too far from Berkeley. So they had a separate campus and it became its own campus. And it intersects with the entire post-war national security state. One of the full-time faculty at Davis, because he couldn't get along with anybody at UC Berkeley, right? You know the story back there, the atomic bomb, the whole Los Alamos project. And his campus was UC Davis. This is Edward Teller, the father of the hydrogen bomb. So when I say I was in the belly of the beast, I didn't know the extent to which this system was affecting my personal life. I was always thought it was out there. It was history. It was outside myself. So one of the big lessons I want, and I know a lot of researchers and serious writers follow your work, so they're watching. And for the audience in general, I want them to know that each one of you who are listening and watching here, your own personal experience, your own life history, you may not think anything of it or something special, but you are an agent of history. You are making history, as well as living it and experiencing with this whole incredible, just for the sake of shorthand, I'll use the term P. Diddy. P. Diddy was, I think he had alters, not just because he was in legal trouble, but I think his mind was also fragmented. And of course, this intersects with my larger interest on post-war as well as pre-war psychology, psychiatry. Popularly, it's known as mind control. So I hope that gives you, your viewers, your audience, an idea of how I operate, where I'm coming from.
Yes, thank you for that. Viewers, please get your questions in the chat for Professor Hamamoto. We are live right now. This is a unique opportunity to pick his brains. I've just got another question about your backstory, though. So most of us start out idealistic, and then something happens and gives us a wake-up moment. Did that happen in your life?
It was a gradual process. It started in childhood, of course. And I think I was born or socialized with a state of profound alienation from the dominant society. I grew up in the 60s. And one of the reasons, by the way, you might hear me slip into Ebonics dialect, which you probably picked up while you were in the joint, right? I'd like to hear you speak, Sean, in Ebonics at some point.
What's crack-a-lacking, homie?
Yeah, there you go. That's right.
What's up?
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the reasons why I was looking forward to this conversation. But to wrap that question up, it was, I lived in the ghetto. I grew up with this. That's why I slip into Ebonics. That is my native dialect. You know, just like people who were born and raised in the south of London are going to have a certain affect in their language, their body language, as well as their speech. So I kind of do this when I give my talk. It's become part of my pedagogy because it's so disorienting. So what is this guy? He's an Oriental. He's speaking like a black man. And then I anticipated this because Kamala Harris, the candidate for president of the United States, Kamala Harris, she does that depending on her audience, does she not? So we have all these different, you know this, we have all these different dialects, or Basil Davidson, an academic British, calls them sociolects. But it's to really show the complexity of the society as I am delivering this information. So I'm not mocking, I'm not making fun. This is who I am. I grew up in the 50s under racial segregation with black people who were back then called Negroes. And that also includes Mexicans and the Orientals, all the non-white people, and the working class people from the South, known as hillbillies. We all lived together. So I had that sort of outsider perspective, and it never left me, thank goodness. I took my baggage all the way to the University of California.
Okay, so as you leveled in, as opposed to having an epiphany, were there any jumps? Like, for example, in my trajectory, when there was the 9/11 insider trading, that was like a jump in my mind. When I read a certain book, that created a jump in my mind, like a leap. Did you have any little bumps on the road like that?
Well, the bumps on the road were more like concussive events. And I'll name them for you very quickly. The assassination of John F. Kennedy, the great Irish-American politician and statesman, I would say, cut down in his youth, his prime. The assassination of his younger brother, Robert F. Kennedy. The assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. and the assassination of Malcolm X. So that was part of my childhood socialization. And I saw how it was affecting my parents because that was their generation post-war who were now entering into the leadership of the nation. Kennedy and my parents were the same age, the same cohort. And so was Martin Luther King Jr. And they were systematically being eliminated. And we know the incredible amount of literature out there by incredible researchers on all these different assassinations. And my contribution to the current issue of Sean John Combs is that he's being character assassinated. And this doesn't mean that I support his actions or vindicate him in any way. And in any way, I'm trying to rationalize or justify what he's doing. But he was set up, and he was set up as part of a process quite reminiscent of the 1960s programs such as COINTELPRO, which was J. Edgar Hoover's program to eliminate political dissent in the United States of America from three primary groups, actually two. One is the Black Power movement. The next is the Brown, and to a lesser extent, the Yellow. The day before John Lennon and Yoko Ono, and the day after John Lennon was assassinated, he and Yoko were going to travel to California to support a labor strike of Asian workers. Right, John Lennon was at the forefront of this, and that's one of the reasons why Many authors speculated that he was assassinated. Oh, that's another one that we can add to the list. This is the bump on the head, 1980. And along the way, I had new reminders from mostly from artists, intellectuals, and by that I mean writers, musicians, popular music. That's why I could sense something was going on in hip-hop and rap. And poets like your own Pete Townsend, right? His immortal line, meet the new boss, same as the old boss, right? I said, yes, Pete Townsend, you nailed it, because it doesn't change. Systemically, it goes back to Babylon. It goes back to this control grid. And this is a topic for a separate conversation, but it might be something that's coming from a non-human source or origin.
All right, this is brilliant. I'm loving what I'm hearing here. Thank you for all the questions coming in, guys. We are going to get to them. I've just got a few more to ask the professor myself. So the next one is, entering academia then, what inspired you to do that? Were you aware at that point of the infiltration of intelligence in academia? And on your journey in academia, if you weren't aware in the beginning, what made it become apparent?
Mm-hmm. Excellent questions. I was an innocent. Like most of us, we go into activities, projects, or even life courses with the great expectations. If I can use again Dickens, Great Expectations. Mm-hmm. And, our parents tend to shield, and community members tend to shield us from the unpleasant truths of the world because we're children. But we find out that very quickly, I was finding out as early as my teenage years from reading novels and fiction. And that's how I really wanted to go. I didn't want to go into academia. I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be the Charles Dickens of the United States of America, doing sort of social history, but presenting it in a highly suspenseful, entertaining serial form. Like the way you do it with your show, right? From episode to episode, you are chronicling what Dickens used to chronicle. I guess it was George VII? He was pre-Victorian. Victoria came in onto the throne 4 months after Oliver Twist or something like that. So he's not a Victorian, he's pre, but he lived through that age. So I wanted to do that. I wanted to write fiction. I wanted to write novels. I was reading D.H. Lawrence. I was reading, I could learn about the societies, the working class politics, as well as the psychology of the peoples. They had incredible layers of depth that I wanted to probe. But in doing so, I got sidetracked because I wanted to learn more about the different disciplines with the hopes of making myself a better writer. And I was thinking of the printed word. And it's only recently till I started my own YouTube channel 3 years ago that I finally managed to overcome my prejudice in favor of the printed word. So it's going to be a long time before I publish another book. And I know you're a book author many times over. And instead, my writing is focused on Ironies of Ironies on YouTube. So that's how I came. And I don't consider that a downward fall from the heights of academia to YouTube. I think it's an expansion, a much needed expansion of this level of inquiry that's going to benefit much larger audience than I enjoyed as a professor.
So when did you see intelligence co-opting universities?
Well, my mother was a big reader of Life magazine. And as we know now, Life magazine was connected to the CIA. C.D. Jackson was one of the characters. It later morphed into Time, Warner, and Consolidated. And they later, by the way, bought heavily into the hip-hop and rap industry. And I mention this because we're talking about a corporate history here that intersects with so-called thug life and gangster history. You were living in yourself in the prison industrial complex, which, make no mistake about it, is a for-profit enterprise. All right. So I'd have to credit my dear mother for this. She had the magazines around, and she would talk about conspiracies. I thought it was crazy stuff. And she got me an early abridged copy of the Warren Report, right, which was a put-up job that was dictated by President Lyndon Baines Johnson, who took over from Kennedy, who now, it seems, was probably an insider in the assassination of the beloved political martyr John Fitzgerald Kennedy. So it started in those, and that got me to thinking. And since then, I think I was always attuned to it and looking for it. And then a whole generation of post-60s writers who had experienced the Vietnam War, the Watergate crisis, they called it the credibility gap back then, the counterculture, new forms of journalism, spearheaded by Tom Wolfe, and headed by publishers such as Jan Wenner, who subsequently I know was always an insider, becomes from a wealthy San Francisco socially prominent family. But he was publishing this, I think fortnightly it was at the time, a tabloid called Rolling Stone that now is a globalist mouthpiece. So I was reading those as a teenager religiously, all the pop magazines. And that shaped my perception of the world. And it also, to answer your question, clued me in that there were powers far beyond we were being told in elementary school or high school that were behind all this, these hijinks.
All right. So there we have Professor Hamamoto's trajectory of what led to his worldview. I'm just going to put this up because it's something you touched on, and I want to expand on this. So Jennifer said, oh, no, that's not the right one. Let me see. It is to do with, let's see, where's that one gone? Actually, I'll give you this one for now while I find the other one. How can we get college-educated Americans to vote for a candidate who has been charged with felonies and is out on bail because he tried to illegally disenfranchise 81 million people?
Is that Joe Biden? I mean, you could read that question in two different ways. There's this concept of unindicted co-conspirator, right? So we're dealing with a bag of snakes here. And my reading and understanding of history is that there's not the white hats on one side and the black hats on the other. I tread the line between shades of gray. It's nuanced. It's crazy. Sticks in your craw that you might have to support someone who is not the most ideal citizen and is on bad behavior. So I have to weigh those ambiguities out and make the right, this is my own process of thinking, and make the right decision for who I think is best for the nation at this point. And then if he slips up, or she, because it could be Kamala Harris that they're talking about, then we can hold them to account, and we will.
All right, let's go back to Diddy then. So a question from Rose, a comment actually, but I want to expand on this. I could see Mr. Hamamoto's argument about Did's character assassination, so they could have gone after, say, Clive Davis instead, suspected to also being involved. However, Did is guilty in this case. So Rose, you know, the theory that I have been hypothesizing in recent weeks is that, yeah, Diddy's guilty as hell, allegedly, but the timing of it is because these people rise up in the world. They become too big for the boots. They become activists. The clubs accepted them, but there becomes a line they cross where the club thinks, hey, you know, these people are compromised. We can dispose of them whenever we want. I think the time's come for Diddy. So that's my theory, Professor. What is your theory as to the timing here?
Well, the timing is to divert energy and attention from the run-up to the election, and it's doing a really good job at it up to a certain point, because this whole Diddy, Sean John Combs situation has a lot of legs on it. You've been doing this show for your show for quite a while, and you know it's most of these topics are a flash in the pan. They're here today and they're gone tomorrow. But this is a story that's it's a meta story. It's a story within a story within a story. So if the attempt on the, because it was timed perfectly, right? Or they thought so. If their intention was to divert the American public, the world attention from all the shenanigans that's going on, it's failed as a PSYOP. And that's one of many good bits of news that I want to share with your audience today, is that these people are not as omnipotent and as smart and savvy as we give them credit for. And unfortunately, a lot of people in so-called indie media, which is itself has been compromised, it's been infiltrated. And we don't need to mention any names at this point, because I bang on about them in my X account, in my Patreon. I always name check the phonies. I call them the pop-up pundits that have been showing up, right? You are the OG. Those other guys are the pop-ups, and you know who they are. But it's not working. Their PSYOP, this, which is the roll-up that we're talking about here, the P. Diddy situation, is not quite working. Now, there's going to be some dunderheads that are going to keep shouting about, oh, show us the list, and they're in it for the pure entertainment, the salacious value. But I think, at least here in America, there's a much deeper, serious interest in the case of one Sean John Combs. For an example, he's a second generation criminal gangster. His father was Melvin Combs. This is like, again, in the aforesaid 1960s. Black Panthers, the Puerto Ricans had the Young Lords. The Asian people, the yellow people, had the different nationalist groups as well. And they combined with a lot of street criminal organizations. And Combs was one of them. Melvin Combs. And he was assassinated. He was murdered. I think he was in the course of some sort of drug deal. And if I may, because I know there's a lot of serious writers and investigators who watch your show, if they want to refer to this book by John Potash, The FBI War on Tupac Shakur, it gives them a really good, solid story from a leftist perspective, albeit. And there's some limitations with that, because this book is a few years old, and he's a little bit too sympathetic and flattering of Sean John Combs or P. Diddy. He thinks he's being persecuted. He is, but it's not as easy as that. He's also complicit, in addition to him being persecuted by certain government and corporate sources. It's like Fagan. When Fagan used his criminals, his little boys, the 12 years old, he would grass them out or peach them out. Is that the term, peach? Do they still use that term anymore?
In the UK, I've not heard peach. It's okay, here. It's,
but you know grass.
Grass and yeah. Snitch.
Okay, yeah. In Dickens' day, they said peach. But he would peach them out, Fagan, because they knew all his secrets and the how-tos and the thievery, and he would get them hanged. So this is what we're seeing here in the case of P. Diddy. And reading this introduction, this is a fine edition of Oliver Twist, done by one of your incredible British scholars, the introduction, the annotation. It's a Penguin. He points out that Oliver Twist, the name itself that Dickens gave him, was to connote a body twisting in the breeze, because there were still public hangings going on in the early part of the 19th century. They were spectacles, right? Now, we don't do any public hangings. We do it privately at the Metropolitan Detention Center by putting in people in the same cell with known thugs, and they mysteriously hang themselves, right? That's the way we do it in the 21st century. But Twist is like twisting in the wind, Oliver Twist.
Yeah, and we had the roots of the prison industrial complex back then as well, because kids who were turned in for shoplifting and hung and stuff like that, there were finder's fees, There was all kinds of contractors making money off the hanging. It was an industry in itself. All right. Going back onto some of the things that you've just touched on then. So John Potash was on the channel on Sunday.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, he was here. The book that Professor Hamamoto was holding up, that's John's book, folks. And yep, there it is. Check it out. Great guest. And you touched on the Diddy story running in the news. I've not seen anything run like this since Epstein, which ran and ran and ran and caused a complete nuclear annihilation of my channel. But my question for you is, do you see parallels with Epstein and Diddy's cases?
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Yes, it to me, and not just myself, but it seems like this is, it has all the earmarks of an intelligence operation, a larger intelligence operation, and it does not end with the U.S., the usual suspects, the American alphabet agencies. I'd have to say that it's an Anglo-American operation, and if you're talking about the Anglo-American power axis, you would have to also include Israel and their intelligence operations. And that's, you allude to a point I wanted to make, and that there is no single factor explanation to any of this here. In any type of takedown, there are always multiple parties that have a specific interest in doing a job. That's why in classic mafia lore, they always pull the different families to get consensus. And each of them have a separate but related beef to the guy who has the hit on him. But they consult with each other, they work with each other, and they don't move unless there is consensus that they're going to work. So we haven't gotten there yet, but I suspect that we're going to be seeing layers and layers of other national intelligence agencies who have a hand in this case here.
Question from Amy. Epstein files never surfaced. Was it easier to cover because he died?
Well, I think there are a lot of people out there who have information on him, and they will slowly emerge. But this raises another question, and that is that they are gatekeepers who ostensibly are on our side. That is, by our, the public, the people who are interested in justice. And one such person is the attorney David Boies, B-O-I-E-S. Now, this book was written quite a while ago, but I don't think Boies was really known, although he's a super lawyer. He's super well-connected. And I read his autobiography. I've given a talk on Boies himself a number of months ago. But people didn't know who he was until he surfaced in conjunction with the Epstein case. His most notable client was Virginia Giuffre. And he cut a deal where she's going to get X amount of money. But then that information, to answer the question of your listener here, your audience, that information she has, I think they're probably signed a non-disclosure agreement, and it's going to die there. So one of our, I think, goals as independent journalists, independent minds, is to keep the pressure on these gatekeepers like Boies. In the case of, more specifically, of Sean John Combs, his gatekeeper is this guy named Buzbee, B-U-Z-E-E. And he's been making the rounds on independent media. And I see him cutting deals with the estate, the people who represent Sean John Combs, and to hand over the tapes, the videos, the material, where it will die a non-disclosure death, right? They're called NDA. I don't know if there's a similar system in Britain, non-disclosure statements. And in exchange for cash money. And right now, Buzbee's going around beating the bushes. We call them ambulance chasers. When there's an accident, a lawyer chases after the ambulance to get a client so they can sue whoever did the job. That's the origin of the term there. He's a high-level ambulance chaser. And another red flag is he comes right out of the military. He's the U.S. Marine, or was. I think he probably still has the commission. But the military, U.S. military is now in the practice of growing their own. So they will send their assets through law school. One of them is J.D. Vance, by the way. He's a military man. He's sus, as we say, suspect. He's a product of the Yale mafia. And I met one of his handlers, Amy Chua. She's a public figure. She's a professor at law school. And they saw this hillbilly elegy story as being very timely for the American public to bite on, because they want a normal person instead of all these super oligarchs, right? So they put him in there. But he's military. Busby's military. And most of these characters, they send their brightest out of the Air Force and Navy, typically, to law school. They get them doctorates, everything, right? Because they don't want to have to depend on wild cards like me to do their work. So they just grow their own. Busby's one of them.
Next question is from Bulldog. How tied is the British, Israeli, American intelligence operators?
They're like fingers on one hand. You know, the state of Israel is a British creation, is it not? Some would argue. You know, I've read the history. I know about the British Zionism, and I know about the religious, certain segments of the American religious right. You know, it's called British Israelism. They believe that they are bound up with the fate of Israel, and they control a lot of American politics. And within the black nationalist community, amongst the intellectuals that they systematically murdered, they meaning the FBI and going like Fred Hampton, like other people they were harassed, they had a critique of Israel, and they had a critique of Jews too, American Jews. Fagan, this is where the Fagan trial. I mean, this was going on in Dickens' time, and the fact that he was putting it in popular literature means that it was already circulating by the time he was chronicling this, right? So they were attacked, and then there was always some sort of quote-unquote anti-Semitic sentiment that keeps cropping up in a lot of this black and rap and hip-hop. Those people are disposed of. They're gotten away. They get them. As soon as they start showing signs of independence, they'll bring someone, an operator in there, let's say a trainer, a physical trainer, and put them on Kanye West or whoever else is out there, right? One of the uppity types who are starting. And Michael Jackson as well. My gosh, who owns Neverland right now? Talking about who are the intelligence assets behind this, do a little, just a modest public information title search on who owns Neverland. And Neverland,
CIA,
of course.
The CIA, is it? Someone's linked to the CIA.
Well, it's that hand, you know, the fingers on the hand.
Yeah.
And we're getting the middle finger of misinformation and pop entertainment. They only give us the middle one. We want the whole hand. Right, Adam Smith, the invisible hand.
Yep,
there you go. And Neverland, of course, again, to allude to the great contributions of the British Empire to world literature. You know, where did that come from? Neverland, that's J.M. Barrie. That is the creator of Peter Pan, the boy that never grew up. He's described as the devil child. And I've been reading two excellent literary biographies by a guy named Piers Dudgeon. I'm sorry. Neverland, J.M. Barrie, the Du Maurier, like Daphne Du Maurier, George Du Maurier, the dark side of Peter Pan. He was a pedo Pan. And Pan, of course, is that god. And the other one is more specifically about Daphne Du Maurier. J.M. Barrie, Daphne, he was a groomer, and he was a man of letters. He was a literary man. He had enjoyed incredible success with his stage plays. There were multiple different versions of Peter Pan playing in London at the same time. And now it's a children's classic. But what are the origins? What's the social history behind it? It is this military, industrial, colonial, pedophile complex. And why does it stem from Britain? Because the empire, the sun never set on the British Empire, and the colonial culture engulfed the world with all these men who were coming in contact to all these delectable brown and yellow and brown young male bodies. And the appetite for that was whet in the public school system with all the erotic canings and the whippings and the discipline and the bondage. So there's a whole psychosexual layer of this that we need to lay bare, if you'll pardon the pun.
Shouldn't be smiling talking about these horrific things, but Professor, your impersonations are something. All right, so Don is wondering about the suppression of the Epstein files and the role of DeSantis in that, who said he was going to release them.
Well, DeSantis got a message recently, didn't he? He got a series of messages. We call them hurricanes, right? You've probably been hearing information about this being an example of weather warfare. And on my area here in Northern California, we were hit by a series of quote-unquote wild fires, which bore all the earmarks of directed energy weapons. And Dane Wigington has been reappearing recently talking about engineering, climate engineering. By the way, again, UC Davis is one of the pioneers in weather modification. I have their original pamphlets, their booklets, their reports. I had to ferret them. I had to chase them down, look in the library, and I have, and I can see the dates on them going back to the early 60s. And this is my own home campus, and I shared the same campus with Teller and all this. So, yeah. I don't know if that answers the question or not. I tend to stray from the topics here.
That's okay. We love it when you stray as well. Okay. It's all incredibly engaging. So Sparkle is asking, who do you think will replace Diddy's position next? 50 Cent?
Well, 50 Cent is one of the original whistleblowers of P. Diddy. He refused to drop his pants for P. Diddy, so to speak, or maybe literally. And as you know from prison, the whole deal of being a punk is you lower your pants, you sag your pants, and that's a signal that you're ready, you know, for submission to the alpha males of the unit. But he was, and I'm glad you brought him up, because I've been on this research trail for a long time. I was driving in my car, and on public radio came a song by 50 Cent. It says 50 Cent, but we pronounce it 50. We drop the F. That's part of the Ebonics, so I'll say 50, 50 Cent. So, I heard this, and the song is called How to Rob. You can find it on YouTube. I encourage your audience to take a look at it. It's a whole blueprint on how 50 Cent, who is a thug, is going to hold up all the industry blank, his fellow black people. And he just puts down a whole list. He name checks all back in 1999, the whole list of officially approved blacks, officially approved safe Negroes who were brought in by all these multinational media companies to represent black people. And he says he's going to rob. And it's kind of a satire. It's a parody. It's pure Dickens without him knowing it, right? He's going to hold them up. And that money's going to be his. And the beauty of it is he's been able to make a career out of it. I think he has his own cognac brand, does he not? Your audience would know more than I do. So 50 Cent is not going to replace. He's going to be elevated. Cat Williams is going to enjoy a huge career boost, because I've been watching him for years. I knew about the mansion parties. I would lecture about this in class. And my students would go, wow, they never told me that when I was studying for the entrance exams to college. I said, oh, yeah, said, you, this sounds crazy now, but once you're out there in the world a bit, you know, post-college, you're going to find out it's a much different situation.
Which begs the question then, can you only be elevated if you are compromised?
I don't think so. I'm that much of an idealist and a romantic to think that some people are able to slip through. But these are only people who reject the blandishments of the elite, the love bombing, as I alluded to earlier, of the people in power. It's very seductive, literally and figuratively. And it's not just, if I can just diverge a little bit, it's not just for Black people, it's for white people. Wynonna Judd, or Naomi Judd. Remember the group, the Judds, Wynonna and Naomi? They were big in the 1980s, and they didn't come out of nowhere. And I did a talk on Naomi Judd. She committed suicide shortly before, and perhaps a little bit archly or too conveniently, I titled that talk MK Naomi, because that was one of the sub-projects of MK Ultra. So I would recommend reading her autobiography. It's heavily on the therapeutic post-PTSD type of salvation, which I'm against, by the way. That's kind of why I want to bring it up. Most of these, again, you know, we have the controllers who are the lawyers who do the limited hangout, right, like Boys and now Busby. But we also have them, the celebrities who, because this book was written for her, who are pushing psychiatry and psychology. That's right. This anticipates probably some of the questions that your readers, what's the way out? It's not psychology and it's not psychiatry, which is bound up with big pharma and mind control, MK Ultra. I'll just anticipate these questions. And this is a topic, a theme that I revisit constantly in my own channel, Professor Hamamoto channel, because there were two paperclips. We always talk about the bad, evil Aryans, the Nazis, as part of the paperclip, who were exfiltrated by Helen Dulles and Greer. You know the whole story by now. But not many people recognize the fact that the second cohort of paperclip were the opposite of the Aryans. They were refugee Jews and immigrants, and they were psychiatrists, they were psychologists. They shaped the American and the Anglo-American behavioral sciences. These are the people who figured out how to create Project P. Diddy. These are the ones who understand audience reaction and fandom, and they can create wide-scale emotional affect due to their research. Kurt Levin is one of them, organization research. Corporations use them, law enforcement. They do it in academia. It's a branch of study of social psychology. And people keep hammering away, Tavistock this, Tavistock that. These are just repeaters. We know about them. They've been around. And Levin did have a relationship with Tavistock. We know that. But you're not getting, most people are not getting the full picture. And I say this because I'm already reading in this book here. This is, I would also recommend this to your audience of researchers. Did He Do It? It's by, I've had him on my show, Matthew Russell Lee. And he publishes a series because he's there. He goes to the Southern District of Manhattan, the court, and sits in the hearings. And this is the result, one of the results of that. He goes to the Eastern District. He's a boots on the ground, old-fashioned Dickensian type of reporter at the courts. So I get all his books. I would recommend this wholeheartedly. It's kind of raw because it's a first draft of everything. But it has all the factual information, including precedents and related cases like that of R. Kelly, for example. He covered the R. Kelly trial. And then later becomes the content of Lifetime, which is owned by one of these corporations, Lifetime Channel, cable channel, which is geared directly to the female audience, the demographic. I told you the descendants of Kurt Levin know their audience. They know the mind control, the subtle mind control programs, right? That's why they call them Whoops.
Keep going. I'm just changing my battery.
Oh, okay. They know the ins and outs of how their particular demographic operates and how to maneuver them. And the Lifetime channel, I don't know if you get that. You probably do in Britain. Is geared towards a female victimage perspective. Just like the character Oprah Winfrey. The Oprah Winfrey character is a latter-day Fagin. She's that type. There is I don't mean to sound racist. Remember, I grew up in segregation. I have a ghetto pass. Okay. But there's this whole network of black celebrities, and they're all boule, or the black bourgeoisie, like Kamala Harris. And they come from the historically black colleges, right? And they belong to the same sororities and fraternity. Everybody talking about, oh, yeah, Skull and Bone, blah, blah, blah. But the black fraternity is very powerful. And the Attorney General of New York is boule, right? Comes from D.C. They're all situationally placed here. But they also have, on the other end of the spectrum, is people like Oprah Winfrey, Gail, what's her name? And they're all sort of like Lifetime TV or cable channel mongers. Female victimage. They do a lot of psychology, psychobabble, PTSD, and they always encourage you to seek mental health and mental maintenance. It's being promoted heavily, heavily marketed. So we have to understand all the different points of attack and understand that all the different escape hatches that are being presented. Oh, we hate P. Diddy now. We're going to offer you this. Be careful that it's also a trap, maybe even a larger one and a more insidious one.
All right, we have got over 2,000 watching live.
Wonderful.
Please subscribe to Professor Hamamoto's channel. Link is in the description box below this video if you're watching on YouTube. Get your questions in, folks. We've got just under 40 minutes left. And Lisa has said, do you think Diddy has past trauma? Because that's the theme of MKUltra, isn't it? Well, the trauma.
It is, but again, I anticipated this question. She's using that language of trauma and abuse, PTSD. And I'm reading in this book that his attorneys, his defense attorneys, P. Diddy, Sean John Combs, is already setting up the court. So he's putting it in the air about, oh, he was in New York ready to surrender because he's undergoing therapy, as if that's going to clear everything up. Now, so long as we accept the therapeutic, psychotherapeutic model as a cure-all, right? It's the equivalent of confession, and you are given absolution by the village priest, right? That's what it's turned into. So all they have to do is hire some mercenary psychologist to say, oh, yeah, he's responding really well to treatment. Now, it so happens New York is also one of the epicenters of these different cults, mind control, sex cults. One of them is called the Sullivanians. I gave a talk on it. They're uptown. And the Sullivanians were responsible for a lot of what we call today as abstract and expressionist art. Some of those were members. And the critics were part of that network of saying, yes, that fecal swab on the wall that you can't make out and you think your six-year-old could do better, that's a product of a mind-controlled cultural conditioning and mind warpage. And one of your authors, Francis Stoner, the Cultural Cold War, Required Reading, talked about the invention of modern art by these agencies, just like they created hip-hop. And they didn't create it. They steered it in their direction after it grew organically from the community. So they're going to be using the psychology, just as we have to be careful of these lawyers who are going to silence the witnesses, and there's dozens of them even already, and they're going to prevent the material from leaking out that's sensitive, they're going to cut deals with these victims. We have to be careful on God for that. We're also going to have to seal off that escape route of psychotherapy. It was no accident that Sigmund Freud himself sent his daughter to New York, Anna Freud, and she became one of the mavens of quote-unquote child psychology. There was no child psychology before that. That's an invention. It's a construct, and it's control.
Yeah,
and that's where this intergenerational, their euphemism for pederasty, comes in. And speaking of which, I was kind of tough on women who watch Lifetime cable television. Like, they're sitting there eating bonbons and commiserating with Oprah. But by contrast, you have people like Anne Heche, an incredible author. I've read both of her books here. I've given a talk on her, who is about ready to blow the whistle on this whole complex that we're hearing about now. And most of you have seen on TubeU that scene where she rams her car into a house and is carted away, and she comes to life again on the gurney as she's being wheeled away, and she's never heard from again. So there are individual truth tellers out there, and now we're beginning to see how they form a certain pattern of resistance against these stories that are being foisted upon us.
I think an important point you touched on when you were talking about hip-hop is everything, when it reaches a certain size, even if things start out as activism and with good intentions, once they get to this critical mass and their influence in the world, they get co-opted by the dark forces. All right, so Hoaxing the World wants to know, has the professor looked into the genealogy of all Hollywood politics music? They are related back to England.
I can answer the last sentence first. Absolutely. Before Hollywood became big, there was a very large British expatriate community of writers, actors, performance, and people here in America of my age. We grew up watching those films from Britain that were produced, ironically, by Central European Jewish immigrants who could barely speak English, but they saw it as being high culture, legitimate. Oh yeah, let's do Wuthering Heights, you know, let's do Daphne du Maurier, Rebecca, right, with Laurence Olivier and Joan Fontaine. Let's write that. And they had a large infrastructure in Hollywood, and to this very day, it's the same thing. There are a lot of British expat who control American media, including fashion and taste. Anna Wintour is one of them. Her father was a famous editor. His nickname around the newsroom was Chilly Willy because he had no emotion. His son was killed on a bicycle, run over by a car. He came to work the next day showing no emotion or sorrow or sadness at all. I read this in the book of Anna Wintour. And this is the other one, because they're always paired up, right, to give us a fake choice between Coke and Pepsi. So you got Anna Wintour in one, and then the other, you got Tina Brown. And then, of course, you've got Piers Morgan. My gosh, that guy's a journalistic crook. If anybody wants to look in the background, he's the original hacker. So they said, let's send him to America. They'll love him. You know the story better than I do. Right? Is he not a hairball, a sleazeball, sleaze bag? He wouldn't last in prison very long. Yeah.
He's been very successful with his debates.
Yes. Why do we even listen to him? I'm saying do not listen to Piers Morgan. Russell Brand has nothing to tell Americans about our politics. He's asking us to vote there. Like, you don't have a dog in this fight. You're part of the controlled opposition. Get out of here. Right? We have to patrol. And then, I mean, it's obvious. Okay, he's from Britain. But then the ones that are more subtle are from Canada. We've got a lot of infiltration of the Five Eyes And, you know, because you were asking, where do these operations originate? Where do they belong? What's their focus? And this is not against any Canadians, but they are part of this intelligence apparatus here, right? And it goes back to the pre-war period, 20s and 30s here in America. We all know the story of Ian Fleming and Stephenson up in Canada and the early days of the OSS, later to become the CIA. And it's all bound up with this royal lineage. I did a talk, by the way, after reading every single novel of Ian Fleming in sequence. I gave myself a homework assignment. And let me tell your audience something that's quite interesting revelation. Because there's all these Bond fanboys out there, and they know everything about the James Bond movies and the books, except for one key insight, and that is James Bond was a Knights Templar. His family goes back to Scotland. In the very last novel, Q asks them, say, listen, you've done such a great job, we're going to put you up for a knighthood. And he turns them down. And it's because it would be redundant. He's already a knight. And I mentioned this because this is part of the P. Diddy operation. They are steeped in this together with, because you're talking about intelligence, you have to talk about who they are intelligence for. And again, like Dickens, Fleming was giving us these clues in the guise of popular entertainment. And all the time, you know, when I was watching them, I go, wow, Barb and Bach, or the Bond girls, whoever it was, you know, and the music and all the exploding cars. But the subtext was about the relocation of the post-war British Empire into the Caribbean, to the Mediterranean, where it truly resides. It's no longer the city of London. They're the ones who manned the computers, but the geographic locus is, this was revealed in a book called The Panama Papers, where all this money coming from Time Warner, all the media conglomerates, it's all going down through there. The Panama Papers, because people want to know, I want the list. Well, you want the list? Check out the Panama Papers to know where all these operations originate and how they're funded. Who gave Sean John Combs all that money? Where's it coming from? Right? Where did Jeffrey Epstein have his little islands? Right? These offshore banks.
Diageo gave him $1 billion.
There you go. You did a show on it.
Diddy. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And who were the middlemen doing that? There are these banks in the Bahamas, so on, Grand Cayman Islands. And Ian Fleming was already giving us hints that this is where it's moving to. Because the British Empire after World War II had shrunk down to quite a bit, right? Japan had taken over lots of Asia, and the Asians were not going to give it back to Britain, you know, Malaysia, what now Singapore. And there was a whole decolonization process through the 50s. So they said, well, we need another strategy, offshore banks. And we're going to maintain the empire, but it's no longer going to be a geographic empire. It's going to be a biosocial empire. It's going to be a genetic empire.
The sun may have set on the British Empire, but they are still operating in the shadows. And we have got a question here. What network is William Barr and all government, state, and city officials members of? From Repo Man.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Well, Barr is an appropriate family name. Barr, that's not his real name. He's a crypto Jew, like many people. Harold, or the Attorney General Garfinkel is his name, his real name. They anglicize, they have the advantage, they can anglicize their name in order to be Fagin, right? To escape that. They're not going to say, my name's Donald Fagin, right? They're going to say, my name's Donald Wilson, something. I can't do that because when I show up for the caper, they're going to say, oh, you're yellow. So I can't pass. But Barr is a member of the bar, right? I don't know if this question of yours knew that. They were trying to see what my response is. But these are all bar members. This is a Freemasonic operation, too. Like I said, there are multiple parties of interest here that work together on one caper. So it's never one group. It's not only the black bourgeoisie represented by Kamala Harris and all these other characters. By the way, one of the people that's being used now by the black bourgeoisie, comes right out of Yale too, is Damian Williams. He is the black face of the American justice system of the moment because he's the one that put Samuel Bankman Fried behind bars. Southern District of Manhattan, right? That's him. That's Damian Williams. Check out his bio. I'm sure you'll find out that he's black boule. The boule is the advisors, the Negro advisors to the white power structure. And they're the ones who are chiefly responsible for black oppression in America and the world, black Africa as well. The boule, people like Kamala Harris, people like Barack Hussein Obama, the long-legged Mac Daddy, as the pastor David Manning likes to refer to him. Because most black people who are real and will talk to you honestly, they don't believe the hype either. They won't say that in front of the public because they have to show solidarity. But on a private level, they say, that's Hussein Obama. Come on. Come on. This is, your question. You know, he grew up in Hawaii.
You got a question about the boule?
Huh?
You got a question about the boule. The question is, why are the boule not a cult society? So powerful obedience. That's why their nature.
They are powerful. They are powerful. There was an architect of the black power structure working with post Reconstruction after slavery. His name was W.E.B. Du Bois, and he was a mixed race person. He could pass as a white man if he chose to, but instead he was educated probably by sponsors, just like a lot of revolutionaries are sponsored by very wealthy individuals to go to the law school, like J.D. Vance, right? So, yeah, we're going to construct a hillbilly story for you, and we're going to send you to Yale, and then you're going to become president after Trump, you know, is finished out of his term. So I was talking about Williams, right? He follows that pattern. I don't know if he is strictly boule, but the boule goes back to ancient times when the Nubians were consultants to the pharaohs of Egypt, who some people say are of African origin, south of Sahara origin anyway. So it's ancient, just like the Babylonian Sumerian civilization legitimacy that a lot of royals today claim. The boule were the advisors that. So that paradigm, that model was used by people like W.E.B. Du Bois, a light-skinned Negro who was sent to Harvard University, was the first black PhD to come out of sociology. And he came up with this concept of the talented 10th. That is, we're going to sacrifice 90% and we're going to focus on the 10% of the Negro light-skinned population, right? All the ones that come out of the historically black colleges that are in power position are light-skinned Negroes, right? Because they have a lineage of European and Indian Native American that are under the power structure, but they're not full white. They don't have the racial purity that some of these characters demand. So that's the talented 10th concept that W.E.B. Du Bois articulated in a series of articles that they compiled into a classic book called The Lives of Black Folk. He was an intelligence asset before the CIA, before the OSS. He was already working with the post-Civil War planters and capitalists of the North and the South in order to figure out what to do with this newly liberated Negro population. So, well, we're going to discard the 90s and we get 10% to ride herd over them. So that's what's going on now. There are members of the black bourgeoisie who were running P. Diddy. And those people were usually collaborating with, let's say, the Sicilians or the Irish mafia or the Jewish mafia. Okay. American criminality is so wonderful because it is multiculturalism in action where it matters. Money.
The Freak is saying, so the CIA is all about identity politics.
They use it. They have their social scientists and psychologists on staff who look through Twitter and now Facebook, and they read the academic literature. They read my books, and they say, well, where's this going? How can we get into this and steer it in the direction that favors the establishment?
Final 20 minutes with Professor Hamamoto. Please subscribe to his channel. Yes, he is a legend. He is spitting truths. I'm just reading the chat. Get your questions in, folks.
Great.
You've had a lot of questions have come up about your thoughts on George Soros and Elon Musk.
I'll start with Elon Musk. I don't trust him. I know there's a big love affair now with the so-called alt-right who think he's just so wonderful that they restored their accounts to X, which is used to be Twitter. And they conveniently disregard all the technologies that he's putting in place that's meant for total control. This is the end game that he's leading us into. And remember, his origins are also Five Eyes. He comes from the technocratic family line that will have the whole population under centralized control through super advanced technology. AI, quantum computing, and all the other goodies that he's rolling out for us. So I don't trust him. He cannot be trusted. And the alt-right, I'm very disappointed. I shouldn't be disappointed because they're easily swayed like anybody else. But they seem to be falling for the Musk program. And who's the other character that was mentioned? Oh, Soros, of course. He's the Dr. Evil of long standing. He's played out. I think we need to look at his son, who I haven't really looked at it closely, but I'm reading his doctoral dissertation. George Soros has a PhD in economics. He's a highly educated and thoroughly connected person in academic circles. He knows the real motor because, you know, we're all hung up on the glitz and glamour of Hollywood and the hip hop scene and all that. But Hollywood and show business for ugly people is the university. All right. That's where it is. And Soros is of that ilk. He knows. And same with Epstein. Who was he giving money to? These weird guys at MIT and Harvard, right? They would never be admitted to any of these clubs. But they're the ones who are coming up with these longevity schemes that Epstein was interested in. So his son, to finish up the question, is Alexander Soros and finished a PhD at the University of California, Berkeley, in history. So he's continuing the legacy. That's the person we need to start looking at now. And I'm starting by looking at his dissertation on Heidegger, Martin Heidegger, the great existentialist or pre-existentialist philosopher who also was sympathetic to the Reich. He wasn't a party member of the Nazis, but he was able to be a rector of the university throughout the entire lead up and during the war. This philosopher of liberation. Right, where God is dead. Okay, let's read some Heidegger. Let's read some Jean-Paul Sartre. And in many of these cases, you find out they're controlled by these intelligence agencies, just like the literature, the fiction. There's a great book called Finks, F-I-N-K-S. It's a one-volume compendium of how mostly American literature, literary literature, not the pop literature, that's a related category, were controlled by all these different funding sources, just like the magazines. We already talked about Tina Brown and Anna Wintour, and we all know about the movies now and the music business. Now, Mr. Atwood, what this represents for us is that we have a golden opportunity. A little window has opened for the true creators the artists, the writers, the intellectuals, the historians, the podcasters, right? Right, who are presenting a huge challenge to legacy media. We have a golden opportunity. I'm so glad that it's happening in my lifetime. After all the assassinations I saw and witnessed and lived through as a child, through all the turbulence of the 70s and the Reagan period, attempted assassinations, government wars, endless wars. I'm so gratified to see this tiny window being opened for us, the plain folk.
Just in defense of Elon for a second, because
sometimes
I like to take things as I see them. I'm just looking at the analytics now on who's watching live.
Mm-hmm.
I was shadow banned on Twitter before Elon, so I didn't get hardly any views. So I've got just under 200,000 followers on Twitter, and I've got 400 people watching. I've got 250,000 followers on Facebook, and I've got 14 people watching.
Wow.
14?
14?
On Facebook, and I've got 250,000 followers.
Okay.
I've got less than 200,000 followers on X, and I've got 400 watching. So,
well, Elon Musk
is...
That's my
defense of Elon.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I got back onto X, and if you want to, your audience, if they're interested, I'm there. Now, I only got back into X once he bought the company. I had an account, but I never used it. And same with Facebook. I jumped Facebook out of it a long time ago. So, but just remember where he comes from. Musk, he is the new Mark Zuckerberg. At a certain point, it was real. Mark, he's pretty much over, just like P. Diddy and all these other characters. We need a fresh face. Well, Elon Musk has been paying his dues. So I understand, you know. And again, I told you I don't subscribe to ideological purity, right? Between candidates and platforms, whatever. It's a dark, corrupt world of moral, ethical ambiguity. It's the world of John le Carré. In other words, it's not a fairy tale.
All right. People are asking about your YouTube channel. The link is at the top of the description box if you're watching on YouTube, but I'm going to put it in the chat right now to get more people to subscribe to you. And also, we've got a question on the screen from Bulldog. What is the end goal for the elites? All Americans poor and powerless?
No, a certain super minority of Americans have more power and money than you could even imagine. The end goal for these people, these elites, is radical population reduction and the rewilding of large swathes of urban areas, cities. In other words, they'll be depopulated and returned to the wild, which will be their preserves, right? It's like, let's say in British history, the Enclosure Act, or the pauperization of people in the rural areas that forced them into London to live in squalor for the new economy. We're already seeing that. And the squalor that we're seeing now, this is what you might be alluding to, the questioner, is a forced squalor, and it's selective in some of these formerly beautiful cities like San Francisco, because they want to create that optic, that version of reality for us to say, yes, we need some radical solutions to this. We need the 15-minute clean city. And it'd all be this utopian dream, this technocratic wonder city that is envisioned by futurists like Elon Musk. That's what we need. So that's where the resources are going to go. We have to resist it. We have to live with some filth, weird, some weirdness on the street, eccentricity, a little bit of squalor, because the options are worse. And we've seen all the dystopian films that talk about perfectly sanitary post-zombie apocalypse types of living environments, and that would be pure hell. But that's what's going to be held out for us.
let me just clarify to the viewers. I'm not saying that I love everything about Elon just because I'm getting more people watching on Twitter right now than Zuckerberg's platform. My philosophy is anti-dogmatism. I believe there is good and bad in everybody. There's more good in some people than bad, and there's more bad in some people than good. And let's see.
No, I'm with you on that.
Oh, the Clintons. Who are the Clintons' masters?
Wow. I think I alluded to this early on, and it's too big of a topic to address right now, but they are not new human. They're not human entities. They're non-human entities when you're talking about it. And that is another discussion altogether. And I can give you some names of people that I look off camera to, that you might want to have on your show that will answer that question. Because to a large extent, we're being misled to think that these people are even human. What makes for their weird predilections, their habits, their bloodlust, their desire for adrenochrome? What feeds them? Right.
Well, we can't go down that road. Can't go down that road.
Okay.
Yeah, I just had a colleague has just got his channel terminated for saying certain all things. Right. Yeah.
All right.
Let's go on to the next question. But yeah, send me some Clinton researches, because I've written a book, Clinton, Bush, and CIA Conspiracies, mm-hmm. from the boys on the tracks to Jeffrey Epstein. And we did a whole chapter on the hashtag body count. Mm-hmm. So, seven deadly chins. When does the weird shit start happening in Freemasonry? At what levels?
Well, I think at the final stage or stages, you find out that Lucifer's at the top of the pyramid. You've been worshiping Lucifer all along. You didn't know it. You were thinking you were cultivating the self and developing knowledge and information. But then by the time you're so deep into it, your false god is unveiled for you. And then by that time, you're so invested, you have to bring in new people. Just like Fagin always had to bring in new boys to replenish. In America, we're bringing in new bodies through south of the border, through illegal immigration. There has to be continual recruitment. That is probably the most important task of any of these organizations. They're always recruiting and grooming.
Yes, Alisa. My friend Mark Atwood, fellow Atwood, his full channel was terminated for overly using the Adreno Kool-Aid vernacular, let's say. Okay. And I've had my channel terminate twice, so I am familiar with the lines that we've got to adhere to.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
If people want to check out my Patreon, I have I can post documents, PDFs, and I have all the supporting receipts, as they call them these days. The science behind it. That's all I need to say.
Yeah, we've got a lady called Corinne Hutzibout, who mm-hmm. is a criminal profiler, has gone into the prisons of France. She's European and interviewed child killers and demonic people and participants in the drink that we just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And she might be a good one for you to collaborate with. I could connect you guys if you like. All right, so Francesca. Mm-hmm. Professor Hamamoto, what shall we do to wake up the masses?
Well, as I've been holding up these books to inspire people, to light a fire on them, first start reading. That was my road, to answer one of your earlier questions, that was my road to awareness. And I gradually started to fill in the picture. Reading, reading, reading. And it's still such a great bargain. Books are cheap compared to most other forms of information. And then there's programs, of course, obviously, your show, the Sean Atwood Show, and there are others as well. We don't need to talk about them. And YouTube, just watch, absorb, and look at them critically. Read against the grain. And also, as I've alluded to earlier, be careful of the charlatans. The pop-up pundits are currently aggressively leading people away with honest questions such as this. They're leading them astray.
You've referenced so many books in this interview, Professor Hamamoto. perhaps, I don't know if you could be so kind as to email me the list of them, and I could put it in the description box for the viewers.
Okay.
And if any of them are on audiobook, I think I'm going to download some of them myself, because this is right up my street.
Yes. And if you look on my X account, I post the book cover artwork on my entries just to kind of show people what I'm reading at the time or preparing. So that's also like a running bibliography if you're interested on X. So we'll give one to Elon Musk for allowing that.
He does have some qualities.
Yes. I mean, he has children too, so I assume he wants some semblance of civilization to remain as their legacy.
Have you looked at what he said about his trans child that's disowned him? The woke mind virus was a thing that's caused him, he's saying, to go on this crusade. I found that quite interesting. Do you think that's just fabricated, or do you think he's genuinely on a mission?
I think that's sincere. Yeah. He had a revelation. He had an insight. And sometimes it takes something that horrific. And not that his son is, you know, in jeopardy of any sort, but it might take that kind of shock to get people to act. And I think that he honestly formed that opinion. That was his wake-up call, so to speak, about what this system is. It doesn't even spare people like him.
Is the high-end art scene also controlled by the club?
In a word, yes. And you're not in it. And neither am I, thank goodness. If I showed up at one of these events, it would be like, wow, there's a turd in the punch bowl. That would be me.
I'm gonna ask you a question, but there's another word that YouTube's recently sent me an email about using.
Oh,
so
that?
Okay. We're not gonna say the word beginning with S. We're gonna say unalived. We're gonna say unalived.
Unalive. Okay.
Unalived. Will Diddy be unalived like Epstein?
No. That's too obvious.
Really?
He'll be allowed to die a natural death in prison, like Charles Manson. And there,
before,
you know, there
trial?
Are
before trial?
Oh, even after. I'm assuming he's going to be convicted and sentenced. Yeah, he's going to die of old age in prison, I think.
But do you think it will go to trial, or that will be
impeded
somehow to prevent big names getting announced in court?
Well, that's where the attorneys come in. His attorneys and the prosecuting attorneys, they're going to cut a deal for damage control, and it's only going to go up to a certain level. There's going to be a glass ceiling imposed on it, and it's going to be understood amongst members of the bar, not B-A-R-R, but B-A-R, because that's who they work for. They don't work for P. Diddy. They do not work for the state of New York or the U.S. attorney. They work for the bar.
But do you mean if he's going to cut a deal, it's going to go to plea bargain, or do you think there's going to be a staged trial?
Well, there'll be a ceremonial trial, and that is really, it's theater. For the most part, you're from the beginning to the end, to the setting of it. So he should appreciate that, because he is a showman. But the problem is that the judge is going to say, this is my stage, not yours, P. Diddy. Let's not forget it. So, yeah, they're going to give him a fair, quote unquote, fair trial. But I don't think he's going to be Epstein'd.
Give my disclaimer on Candace Owens before I put this one to the professor, because, like I said, there's good and bad attributes in everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And credit to Candace. She has been going on about the Manson family and the O'Neill book. I had O'Neill on years ago, and I've listened to the audio book, and it's brought back a lot of good memories about the CIA and MK Ultra and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Well, I imagine that the professor is going to focus on some of her other attributes. The question is, I would love to know what the professor thinks of Candace and a change to Catholicism and regarding who she's married.
She is married to a man of quote unquote white, whatever that means, right? And I did learn of her recent conversion, relatively recent conversion to Catholicism. But so did, what's his name?
Tony Blair.
Tony Blair, yeah, there you go. And Russell Brand, right? He's a recent con. I think I saw something on YouTube where he was leading everybody into prayer. Right.
And is that a Christian thing or a Catholic thing?
I think Russell? It's, well, some people say that they're not the synonymous, right? But the deal was that it was some attempt at prayer. Right. And I didn't buy it either. Sorry. Yeah. In fact, I thought it was pretty creepy.
Pardon? We've interviewed so many people who the priests, Catholic priests, have done horrendous things to. There are some very dark attributes to that institution.
Well, then there's also Archbishop Vigano. He was even defrocked. He was kicked out of the church because he's been an ardent critic of the current regime of the Vatican. And then most of us know about our friend, the person who's written about the Jesuits, Malachi Martin, right? For a lot of people, he was a gateway into that whole world of intrigue. So there are any number of them. I think there are a lot of rank and file ones that are probably good. So we had to be careful.
I was raised a Catholic. I was actually an altar boy.
Wonderful.
I dodged the priests. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you're a nice, well-mannered and cute young boy. With they prey on. So,
and you,
but
you
some
been,
of them
you,
are quite good. They, I think they, right now there's a an emphasis on all the creepy ones, purposely, because they want people wholesale to abandon any form of religiosity except psychotherapy. Right, and it's definitely anti-Christian. So I will support anybody who is on a spiritual path in general, because the question was specifically about Candace Owens. I don't fault her for anything except that she's an entertainment personality. All right. She is a pop-up pundit that I'm talking about. Right. You lived what you are talking about from the inside out. You're not a desk jockey, as I like to call them. You've been there, done that. You've had a life. And not to say that she hasn't, but there are all these characters who are coming up and they're just a distraction. The fact that we're even talking about Candace Owens, who has zero to offer really in terms of information, except that she's the novelty of the quote unquote black conservative, which is not only that unusual. I think most blacks have always been conservative. There just hasn't been any emphasis on them. Church going, Christian, you know, Baptist, largely, man, there's a certain segment of Catholics, very fewer Episcopalian. So she's not a novelty to me. She is probably for indie media. I mean, also look at how many people in indie media are yellow. You're the first person to, on this scale, to interview me. Am I the first yellow person on the Sean Atwood show?
We've had Asian guests in the true crime podcasts over the years.
Okay, all right. See, I'm an anomaly. As I told you before, when you asked me about my path, I've always been on the outside. I've always been on the margins. So I'm in response to some of the questions I'm getting here is that if you, the persons who are asking the questions, if you think you're alienated and if you think you're marginalized and you're not being heard, start there. That's good. That builds character. That gives you a critical edge because you're not in it. You're not in the mainstream. You're not going to be accepted to the big club as George Carlin, the great Irish American humorist. He's beyond that. But George Carlin says, you're not in the club. So stop worrying about it and stop following Sean John Combs, whoever else is served up to you. And it could be, you know, there's someone for every demographic. We didn't even get a chance to talk about this character.
Oh, Ashton
Kutcher.
Yep, go for
and
it.
This is Brittany Murphy, who died under suspicious circumstances. Right?
What's your thoughts on Ashton?
Well, he's been publicly associated with all these organizations that are supposed to be child advocacy and anti-trafficking. And as soon as it was revealed that he and Mila Kunis, who was another child juvenile actor that he started with in a sitcom here in America, the 70s show, that they wrote a letter in support of one of their fellow actors after he was convicted of rape, asking the judge for leniency, he quit the membership of those organizations, and now he's gone quiet because he was also part of this milieu, Ashton Kutcher. So when we're talking about P. Diddy, we're talking about Sean John Combs, my gosh, it goes all over the place. So I'm going back and I'm watching all the films of Ashton Kutcher, just like I watched Rebecca again by Alfred Hitchcock last night, adaptation by Daphne du Maurier. It's about mind control. Her father, George du Maurier, wrote the famous novel Trilby. The hat was named after that to this guy. And he was into mesmerism, mind control, Svengali. So this is not new. This is something that is part of the fabric of so-called mainstream society. And we must be on guard against it.
Professor Hamamoto, we've gone into overtime. You've been such an eloquent, well-mannered, well-researched guest. You've put various threads of the spider web together in a most engaging manner. You are backed up to the hilt with questions that are unanswered. And I'm going to give a poll to the viewers. Put a one in the chat if you'd like to see Professor Hamamoto back on the channel. Put a two in the chat if he can bog off. That's a rhetorical question. I know it's going to be all ones. Yep, here they come. Here they come. Is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion? This has been such a pleasant.
Yes.
I'm gonna have a smile on my face for the rest of the night now after talking to you.
Right.
And I thank you.
Yes, maintain your sense of humor through all this. Always.
Indeed.
There's a touch of absurdity even in the most horrific type of events. And again, that is part of the literary sensibility that I was attracted to. Now, I don't want to put you on the spot, but Mr. Atwood, I would like to publicly invite you on my show.
Anytime, my friend. Absolutely.
Okay. Because I want to talk more about what life was like in the prison. I want to hear some stories about El M.
La M.A., yeah.
Yeah. And about the Bloods and the Crips. And
La
the whole Lista. Prison culture.
La Pinta.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Honestly, your energy, your positive energy, I'm infused with it right now. And I can see it in the chat as well.
Keep going.
So we will be in touch for further collaborations. I'm going to close the show.
All right.
And have a great rest of your day. Don't watch too much Ashton, though. We don't want to pollute your mind. And get this frequency down. Keep it up, please.
Yes, watch vintage Alfred Hitchcock films.
Indeed.
He was very much in tune with this milieu that we've been talking about.
Until next time, Professor, we will see you then. Cheerio. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Wow, what a fantastic guest. People were saying in the chat, where the hell did you find the professor? He came up, suggested when I was watching Diddy stuff, and I was watching him, and he's linking it to intelligence and MK Ultra. And like he said, I've got the firsthand experience of being in the prison system and the activism and the prison industrial complex. He's got the firsthand experience of being in academia, seeing it get corrupted, seeing it get co-opted, and just reading endlessly. You can tell how well read he is from all of the books he referenced in the interview this evening. And I cannot wait to get an email from him listing all these books and putting them in the chat and going down those rabbit holes. So please, yet again, subscribe to Hamamoto. I'm putting the link again in the channel.
I look forward to going on his channel. And that was an absolute delight. He is a diamond in the YouTube stratosphere. He's a diamond in there. And I feel honored that he's come on and spent so much time with us this evening. So there's his channel link in the description. Shane, I know you've got the coronavirus, but you need to get off your ass and get us a guest for Wednesday evening. I've been telling everyone we've got Lionel Nation and Jaguar Right, but that is actually Thursday. We've got this double whammy of Jaguar Right on for an hour and then Lionel on for an hour. Lionel had us cracking up like crazy as well and is very charismatic when we had him on last week. So we got this double whammy of Jaguar and Lionel coming on Thursday night. So that's what we've got to look forward to the next. I will keep you guys posted. Thank you for all of your questions. It does really shape the direction of the interview, and it makes my job a lot easier as well. So, yeah, thank you for all your questions, and we will see you next time. I'm going to go and play with Baby Ziggy now.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.